This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And this is Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, we have a worldly individual on the line today. Who will we be speaking to today?
Our guest today is joining us from Philadelphia on Saturday, August 24th, 2019. Aaron Beverly rose above 30,000 participants to win the world's largest speech contest, which is, of course, the World Championship of Public Speaking at the Toastmasters International Convention. Aaron rocked the stage on that Saturday and took home the trophy, and he is here to speak with us today. Aaron Beverly, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Hi, Ryan. Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Aaron, before we actually jump into your contest experience, let's go ahead and meet the man behind the award. I'd like for you to go back and share with us the start of your Toastmasters journey. When did you first visit a Toastmasters club, and why did you decide to join?
I first stepped foot in a Toastmaster club in 2009. I had joined the Susquehanna Icebreakers, and that was a Toastmaster club that met on my school campus. So I had heard about Toastmasters a couple years before that, and the reason why I heard about it was because at my school, I went to a really small school called Central Pennsylvania College. It's really small. People who live in Central Pennsylvania don't even know it exists. And I was lucky enough to have had a former international president be an adjunct professor there. His name is Dilip Abesekera. He was the 2005-2006 international president for Toastmasters International. And he was the one who introduced me to the organization. I saw his ability to speak, and I was amazed by how eloquent he was and how easy words seemed to come to him, and I wanted to have that ability. So it took me a couple years and a traumatizing experience after that, but eventually I joined Toastmasters in 2009.
Of course, not to pour salt on the wound, I want to hear a little bit more about your experience at Penn College. I understand, I actually read that you forgot a few lines while giving your speech during your sophomore year. What I'm interested to find out is, could you tell us a little bit about your experience, and what would you say now to Aaron back then?
Well, the experience itself, I had graduated from this leadership training program, and at the graduation, all of the graduates had a role to fulfill. My role was to get up and say a few words to the keynote speaker of the day. I only had to say three lines. On behalf of the Student Leadership Training Institute, we would like to thank you for your time today. Please accept this token of appreciation. That was it. The day comes, I get up, I shake the keynote speaker's hand, and I say, on behalf of...
Oh, no.
It was 15 seconds of the most awkward silence that you could ever imagine. And during that 15 seconds, keep in mind, I am still holding that man's hand. And he's looking at me as if to say, kid, please just say something. It is not that hard. And so I just say, here, and I sit down.
Ouch.
But that was the traumatizing experience. And once I had that experience, I said to myself, I do not want to have that feeling ever again. That is what prompted me to join Toastmasters. The thing that I would say to myself at that point, though, is that just learn the fundamentals of public speaking. I promise you it will get better and you will be seen as a master of it.
Sage advice. Obviously, you've mastered the World Championship of Public Speaking. Now, again, you won this year, but this wasn't your first time in the final round. When did you start competing, and how has that helped you grow as a speaker?
I first joined the international contest fray in 2012. And when I first decided to compete, I had that hubris that a lot of new competitors have where they may be the best speaker in their club, and now they think that just because they're the best speaker in their club, that's going to automatically mean success in the international speech contest. Spoiler alert, it is not. I gave a great speech at the club level, and I dominated that round mainly because I was the only person who participated in the club contest that year. Then I went on to the area contest, and I thought that I had written a great speech, that it was going to get me all the way to the finals. So I was completely shocked when my name was called for second place. And after that year, a person came up to me and he said, "Do you want to know why you lost?" And mind you, as a competitor in a speech contest, that is the last thing that you want to hear from anybody. But fortunately for me and him, honestly, I was able to maintain my composure and I just accepted his feedback. He told me that I needed to work on my storytelling and speech fundamentals. I didn't have good story structure. I didn't have a solid speech structure, and I needed to work on that. And that's what made me go and get mentorship from another person who was more experienced. Luckily for me, I did have a great mentor that I didn't use before in Dilababe Sekera. So I went to him in 2013, and he became my first and only speech coach.
Aaron, we're almost ready to dig into your actual speech. But just before we do this, there's one other question I want to ask you. And that is, let's say you went to your next Toastmasters meeting for your home club, and someone came as a guest that night, decided to sign up, had heard at the club some discussion about the speech contest that's coming up and wanted to compete, and then heard that you were the world championship of public speaking. And let's say this person said, "So Aaron, I'd really like you to tell me, what are the elements of a winning speech? What do I need to do?" What would you give as sort of a thumbnail sketch to someone who asked you about the elements of a winning speech?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I alluded to it a little bit before. You need to know the fundamentals of storytelling and speech structure. If you don't have a solid structure or organization in your speech is going to seem like it's disorganized, that it's all over the place, and people are not going to understand what your message is. And as far as storytelling fundamentals go, you have to be able to tell a quality story. Especially over the last several years, storytelling has become such a focal point in the speaking scene and in Toastmasters. So you really want to make sure that you know how to tell a proper story, how to develop characters, as well as how to have a sequence of events that can climax and really keep the audience engaged. So the fundamentals are definitely number one, but more importantly than that, it's having a message that you truly believe in. One of the things that annoys me when people come to me and they ask me certain questions, the questions that they typically ask are, what topics can help me win the world championship of public speaking, or what topics can I use? When you have that mentality, you're just thinking about yourself. You're thinking about your own desires. You're not really thinking about how you can help someone or help the world. That was the mentality that I eventually took. You have to have a message that you believe will help somebody, that you believe will help the world. And if you have that message, regardless if you win a trophy or not, if you were able to help somebody, you won.
So your speech is entitled An Unbelievable Story. So maybe share with us, if you could share with us a little bit about how did you come up with the topic?
The topic itself came from an event that I experienced in 2018. I went to a friend's wedding. My friend was getting married in India, and he had invited me. So I decided to get on a plane, fly to India to attend his wedding. He was getting married to his Indian fiance, and it was really a culture shock for me because they had all of these rituals and events that I was unfamiliar with. And one of those rituals was a game that's played at the wedding where the groom's side will protect the groom's shoes, and they have to protect them from the bride's side. So this was something that was totally new to me, and it basically devolved into a huge wrestling match in the middle of the wedding. And it was a moment that I will never forget. So I thought to myself, I wonder if I could make this into a speech. So I decided to write it out, and I wrote it out as a full story, and I posted it on Facebook, and it got really good reception. So I said, okay, I think this can work. So I'm going to see if I can take that full story and refine it into a 7-minute speech. And I think I was a bit successful in that.
For sure. There's this concept you've probably heard of, and our listeners probably have heard of as well, as an earworm. Mm-hmm. That refers to music, a song that's just like really catchy that gets stuck in your head. And I don't know if there's such thing as a speech worm, but if there is, you've created one, at least for me. And what that is every time I hear your name and think of you, I hear this voice in my head that says, you know what I'm going to say, don't you, Aaron?
It could be one or two things.
Okay. What do you think? Let's hear your guesses.
I think it's the 2016.
Nope.
Oh, it's not the 2016 title.
That's amazing, too. It's from your world championship speech.
Okay,
It's a four words.
They pull, I pull.
Come on, say it with meaning, like you said.
They pull, I pull.
8 versus 1. They pull, I pull. But I hold firm, because when I have a mission, I take it very seriously.
Right. Absolutely. And that has nothing to do with my question, by the way. I just wanted to point that out. My question really, though, is, you know, a lot of times in crafting a speech, a speaker will take some creative license with the facts of what really happened. And I'm just curious, in this case, how accurate is the narrative of the events that you describe? Was there some creative license in the activities? For example, I'm guessing there was some hyperbole employed when you talked about the camera person tackling you to the floor, but could you speak to that a little bit for us, please?
Well, what I tell people, and I say it in full seriousness, is that you will be surprised by how much of that story is not exaggerated. So the cameraman actually putting down his camera and charging over and just tackling me in my seat, that happened. And that happened almost word for word.
Oh, my goodness.
The creative license that I mainly took was, obviously, there wasn't a sense of as much of a sense of being a spy as I made out in the speech. But the license that I took was consolidating my characters. There were a lot more people involved in that incident. And if you were to have read the full story on Facebook, you would have seen more of the characters that were involved. But for a 7-minute speech, I couldn't fit all of those characters in, because it would have been too confusing. There would have been too many characters to remember, and it would have taken away from the power of the speech, I feel. So I decided that I needed to combine some characters. The combinations that I made, the main ones were: the ominous smiler was not just one character. The ominous smiler was a mix of four different bridesmaids who were trying to steal the shoes. And me, as a character in my story, I was actually a combination of two characters. There was one other guy on the groom's side who was protecting the shoes with me, but I couldn't add him in because it would have been a bit confusing. It would have been another character to add, which would have taken more time. So I had to consolidate that and just make it into one character, which was myself in the story.
I was actually going to ask you about the ominous smiler, because that was the one I found quite interesting in terms of why you decided to call her by that name. So I'll maybe spin it a little bit differently. Were there any people that felt, hey, this is not what I did, or this is not really what happened? Or did you have any challenges in terms of people saying, oh, I don't want you to talk about that, or don't talk about that in the speech. I don't want the whole world to hear it.
Surprisingly, no. Even the people who I thought would probably challenge some of the things that I changed didn't challenge it at all. I think they understood the reason why I had to do it. And it was fortunate for me that the guy who invited me to his wedding was a Toastmaster. So I'm pretty sure he was able to explain why I needed to change the things that I changed.
Oh, wow. Wow, really interesting. Aaron, at the beginning of your speech, you start out with this concept that you have this mission to protect the shoes, mm-hmm. right? And you say, I take it very seriously.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a theme that carries out throughout your speech, or maybe a motif is a better word for it, where you kind of call back to that, to your mission. And then, of course, that's what all the action is you protecting the shoes. It's a really funny speech, lots of laughs throughout. And then at the end, you sort of do this recapitulation of it in a very serious, almost somber tone. Mm-hmm. And you use that line again about taking it very seriously in a different way, in a little bit different context. And what really took me off guard when I heard your speech is how I went from laughing to like really getting welled up with emotion as you delivered that line. And let's go ahead and take a listen to that line right now, actually, so the audience knows what I'm referring to.
Open your culture, your mind, your heart to people who are different from you. Show the world that acceptance, despite difference, is not an unbelievable story. This is your mission. Take it very seriously.
So, Aaron, I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about that decision to use that line throughout about taking it very seriously and then to sort of use it as the bow on your speech at the end. What was the thought process there?
Yeah, so the way that I wanted to construct the speech itself, I wanted it to be a roller coaster of emotion. And the way that I have preferred to use the roller coaster of emotions is to use very lighthearted emotions in the beginning. So that way I get the audience to laugh. I tell them a cool story. I get them to envision the story. And then I have become a fan of just totally going almost 180 on the tone of the speech. So it becomes a little bit more somber, a little bit more serious, and this is when I start to deliver the point. So I tell my story, and then I'll spend about a minute giving the point. It's a style that I used in 2016, and it's a style that I decided I wanted to use for the rest of my, air quote, speaking career in the contest. The line itself, I take my mission very seriously. It was a setup. So I wanted to set that up specifically for that ending line. And I wanted it to be done in a different way. So before, it was done in a more humorous effect, but I wanted to bring it full circle and make it a little bit more serious. So it's a tagline that you can remember, but you remember it for different reasons and you remember it different ways. That was my thought process and my intent with that line and the structure of my speech.
Awesome. You ready to have some fun, Aaron?
Sure.
All right. We're going to do something a little bit different. Last week, I put a post out on the official Toastmasters International member group. I attempted to crowdsource some questions to ask you. And I posted the question, if you had a chance to sit down with Aaron Beverly, the 2019 world champion of public speaking, what questions would you ask him? So Greg and I have taken the questions that were submitted, a number of them, and we're going to hit them off to you lightning round style and see if we can get through them real quick. How's that sound?
All right. Sounds great. Let's do it.
Let's say like ultra mini table topics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Great analogy. So our first question comes from Rich Hopkins, who you probably know. And Rich says, why did you choose the wedding story for the finals stage?
It was a cool story that I thought was different, and I wanted to use it and try it out.
Arlena Indra asks, how do you involve the audience?
There are so many different ways you can involve the audience, but the way that I used in the speech was just the call and response. So set them up with something, and then once you make a certain movement, they'll respond.
So Mark Holtz wants to know, how did your speech change from when it was presented at your Toastmasters club from there to the international stage?
It was a lot more raw. had a lot more words that weren't as concise. So I tightened it up a lot more as I progressed in the rounds.
Accredited speaker Cheryl Roche would like to know, how has your life changed as a result of winning the World Champion of Public Speaking?
So many more people know who I am. My anonymity is gone for any Toastmaster event.
That's great. Paparazzi, you know?
It can feel like it sometimes.
One of my fellow club members at Renaissance Advanced Toastmasters, Lorianne Leahy, wants to know, what's the one piece of advice you received in all the evaluations that still resonates with you to this day?
It would have to be the advice that I got after 2012, that I needed help with my speech.
In 2016, Jeff Stein asks, you took second place with the speech many remember. Was there ever any doubt, questions, or adversity regarding on how to improve even further?
There wasn't. In fact, I felt more confident that I could get to that level because I was almost there and I did do it by myself. So I knew that I had the ability to get back.
Jeff Stein is an overachiever because he also asks, to those who want to be where you are, how much work is involved to win it all?
It depends on the person, and it depends on how much work you want to put into the art of public speaking. It's not just an overnight success.
This question probably has an inside joke attached to it, and perhaps you can explain it. Joe Shaw is asking, how is your quest to become hashtag the best millennial coming along? Do you need any Photoshop help with that?
So I classify myself as a bad millennial. Okay. And I'm trying to get better at things like social media and technology. And it's progressing slowly, but it is progressing. I'm becoming a lot more social media active.
You're doing well here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Our final question comes from Russ Kyle Hauser, who asks, did you take your mission to become world champion very seriously?
That I definitely did.
Fantastic. And apologies to any of those who posted questions if we mispronounced your name. Our sincere apologies. But Aaron, great job. I got to tell you this. Not only did you win the World Championship of Public Speaking, you just won the lightning round on the Toastmasters podcast. Congratulations.
All right. Let's keep the winning streak going.
Indeed.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
Aaron, how can people find you or get a hold of you if they're looking for you? Obviously, you're everywhere, but if they specifically want to reach you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, the easiest way for you to reach out to me is through social media, ironically enough, being a bad millennial and all. You can find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and YouTube at Aaron W. Beverly.
Fantastic. Aaron W. Beverly, this has been awesome. It's been incredible. You are amazing. Thank you so much for joining us on the Toastmasters podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com. And let us know how we can help you.